Good evening. My name is Byung-Hwa Choi. I'm one of the pastors from New Philadelphia Church. Welcome to JPM. I'm really excited to release this message, and strangely a little nervous too, but that's usually a sign that God has definitely something to release to the crowd. So I'm very excited. Are you guys excited? Let me see by the show of hands what kind of demographic I have in this crowd. Okay, let me start from foreigners, non-Koreans. You have no Korean blood in you, but you are living in Korea. Can I see by the show of hands? Wow, I think it's a majority. Okay, you guys are the majority today. Awesome, welcome to JPM. Let me see the diaspora Koreans. Part Korean or Koreans who grew up in other cultures. Awesome. Oh, a lot of you. Let me see some Korean natives who grew up in Korea. Come on, my people. Yeah. All of you are my people. I'm Korean native too. Okay. We're the minority a little bit, but awesome. So we have a really diverse, mixed crowd today. And I'm really excited to release this word to such a perfect group like you guys are. So when you first moved to Korea, let me just ask this question. This is mainly to, I guess, people who grew up in different cultures or people who've never been to Korea before. So foreigners, mainly expats. How many of you had a culture shock when you first arrived in Korea? Raise your hands. Culture shock. Can I just hear a few? What kind of culture shock did you guys have? Subway? The fact that people are like pushing and, alright, how crowded it was and how armpits over your head and, alright, all of that. The subway dramas. Staring. Oh, people staring at you on the streets. I'm so sorry, guys. I used to do that too. I'm so sorry. Especially tall white men. I'm so sorry, man. I used to stare them down. Like, anyways, I'm so sorry. Anyone else? Bondegi was a culture shock? Whatever. Go to some other bigger nations. They eat worse things, okay? I didn't say the name of the nation. Anything else? Huh? Pat on the bum? Oh. That's just affection. I do that for myself too, you know? A lot of culture shocks. I'm sure you guys were shocked by the food and the table manners. So different, you know, sharing, you know. We share everything. The same spoon goes into the same jjigae, you know. All that stuff. I'm sure it was pretty shocking. But, you know, culture shock is a natural thing. Would you guys agree? If you go to a new setting, a new country that have, their own set of history and people, there are always parts of the culture that will shock you, and it's a normal thing. But there are parts of a culture that need to be examined before being fully embraced, especially as Christians. So that's what I want to talk about tonight. So we need to develop an ability for cultural exegesis. Everyone say this, cultural. Exegesis. So this meaning, eyes that are discerning enough to be able to break down things and analyze things and to be able to tell what is aligned to the kingdom culture, biblical truth, and what is not. So, you know, let's say you go to like a country like Nepal or something, and then it's very heavy, like Hindu culture there. And if you just fully embrace the culture's thinking, oh, this is just a Nepali thing to do, and you are not going to have a good result as a believer. It's going to be all sorts of mixture with idolatry and their rituals. And you can't just say, oh, Nepali culture, I love Nepali culture and embrace everything. You got to have a discerning eye for that. So for Korean culture, it seems pretty harmless. It seems pretty modern. It seems pretty Western with a little bit of mixture with different cultures. But I'm here to say that Korean culture, there are things that you really need to be discerning about. And I want to encourage everyone to really develop an ability for cultural exegesis. So tonight, you know, I'm not here to say we need to despise or judge or look down upon certain cultures or throw away certain cultures because of their backgrounds or whatnot. However, I am here to say before you embrace Korean culture, you know, I know y'all love Korea, but there are parts that you need to definitely get guidance from the Holy Spirit. For the expats, I would like to say, if you are living in a country and its culture, don't be surprised when it starts to affect you. It will start to affect you because you live in this land. And the spiritual atmosphere is very different. I know numerous of my Korean-American friends or even foreigner friends that are living in Korea, especially Seoul, you know, they never felt insecure about their appearances. They never cared what they wore. You know, they weren't really into fashion or anything. But all of a sudden, being in Korea, it makes them feel self-conscious about their weight, the way they do their hairs, what they wear, and they just feel self-conscious. And it's not just the fact that you gain some weight because of Korean food, you know, you have access to cheap Korean food, but it's also because the spiritual atmosphere is affecting you and you cannot ignore that part. So it's going to affect you. So for the expats, all the way more, you need to have discerning eyes. It's crucial for you to be able to discern. And for Korea, from a Korean native's perspective, you know, I need people, we need, as Koreans, we need people from outside. We need people from different cultures to be a voice for us. Because I grew up in Korea. I was born and raised here. I grew up in a city called Busan. It's a poor city down in the south. It's rather traditional. It's more rough around the edges, and that's my background. And I never left Korea until I was 20. And I never lived outside of Korea more than like 2 weeks. So I'm a full-blooded, 100% true native Korean. And for someone like me to be able to discern what is biblical and what is kingdom-like and what is not, I need the voices from outside. So all the expats, all the diaspora Koreans, and all the everyone that's sitting here, we all need your voice to be heard. And then there was a Facebook. I was, you know, looking at my Facebook. What do you call it? Newsfeed. Yeah, newsfeed. And then I saw this post from someone that I knew posted, and was like, it was getting shared a lot. It was by a Korean American girl named Juliana Ha. I'm sure some of you guys saw that on Facebook, but it was her long post about how her Korean relatives that she didn't really have a relationship with ganged up on her and commented on her appearance. You gained weight. Last time I saw you, you were prettier. They like tore her apart, apparently, at the family gathering. And then she spoke up, wrote an article about how that is not okay for them to hurt my dignity like that, you know? But the tone of her voice was very respectful, and she was confronting the culture behind it rather than slandering her relatives. So it was a really well-written article, and it was being shared, you know, all over Facebook. And I thought, this is something that we need, constructive criticism. I need to hear what Korean culture, that in Korean culture, it's so normal when you meet someone, especially in my hometown. Like when I'm with my mom and we walk around, we run into someone that we know, their first greeting is always, 엄마야, 살쪘네! Or 엄마야, 살 빠졌네, which means you gained weight or you lost weight. That's just given. And my mom's so used to it, I'm so used to it, and, you know, we just, like, take it as it is. But, like, I'm sure for people from outside, that's like, wow. That's something that you are never supposed to talk about, right? Yeah, is that true? Yeah? So we need eyes from outside to be the voice of constructive criticism, to be able to build kingdom culture in Korean culture. And also we need Christians who will carry the kingdom culture in this culture. Not to despise the Korean culture or throw it away altogether, but people that are committed to live out and also carry this kingdom culture, biblical principles within the culture that you guys are living in. And that commitment, I think Lisa touched upon it on the last topic. How can I be a blessing? You know, the one that was leading prayer earlier. And I think we're talking about the same thing. If you leave the culture to shape its own future, you will end up with something opposite to the kingdom culture. Because people are broken and this world is corrupt. And if you just leave the culture, it's going to, you know, form itself and it's gonna develop on its own. Leave it alone, then you're gonna have something that you do not want to deal with in the future. And it's just meant to be. So people like us, who are committed to pray for a nation, we need to pay attention to how the culture is changing, how it is being shaped, and what kind of influences are coming in, and what is good and what is not good, and we need to be able to voice our concerns and give our criticisms so that the culture in Korea is going towards what is closer to the kingdom culture. Do you guys want to see that? Yeah. Traditions originated from demonic roots. If we leave it alone, it's going to be perpetuated. Traditions that are good and virtuous, it will be lost. And young people will label it old-fashioned if you just leave it alone. We need to encourage people to uphold good cultures. We need to rebuke people to forsake certain ways of thinking and cultures. We need to exegete the current culture and continue to build the kingdom culture where we are, strategically. And that's why I believe God's brought in such diverse group of people. You know, Lisa was talking about the bread. You know, I don't bake either. But the yeast, you know, that you, the little bit of yeast that you throw into the dough, that's what makes the dough rise, you know. And that's why you're able to bake it. And then when the bread comes out, it's like soft and chewy. It's delicious, right? And so the yeast is the role that we need to play as believers. Amen? Korea's culture, I'm going to get into my main point. Cultural core is Confucianism. Everyone say Confucianism. And I'm sure you guys have heard about this or heard of the term. This was not an easy topic to prepare for. There has been an ongoing debate whether Confucianism has been a positive influence to Korea's identity or not. So there are people that are protecting it. There are people that are, you know, insisting that we need to forsake it. But I'm sure it's both. And I'm sure it had positive influence in Korea's identity, but it also had negative influence on Korea's identity, where we are right now. But God's been really opening my eyes to see many aspects of Korean culture that are negatively, very, very negatively influenced by the Confucianism. And as I've been studying more about Confucianism, there is definitely demonic agendas that's hidden behind what's on the surface involved in this set of beliefs. So I already told you guys that I grew up in Korea, traditional conservative hometown. Even though I grew up myself immersed in the Confucian culture, I did not realize it until I was able to see the rest of the world. And then I realized, wow, what I lived in was very particular. You know, until you get out of it, you just never know, you know. And it was all through, you know, I had all these revelations and learning moments through the expat Christian friends like you guys. So I would like to share a little bit of that. My experience as a Korean native growing up in this nation, how it was. But, you know, I also want to give a disclaimer that Confucianism was not my major. I studied the Bible, right? And English, okay? Confucianism is a huge topic. There's no way for me to just read a book and figure it all out. It's not my area of expertise at all. I did not systematically study it. So this observation is purely from my personal experience and what I believe is a general norm in Korean society. At least among my friends, and I checked with a few of my Korean friends as well. So I'll try to share as objectively as possible, but it's not going to be comprehensive lecture on Confucianism. My disclaimer. Got that? All right? So I want to share about these points, what I've been learning, and I actually want to end with praying together. So if you guys could just pay attention so that you will be sharp when you pray with me at the end. And I believe Confucianism keeps the nation under bondage of idolatry. And so funny, Sister Lisa earlier talked about Jeza, and that's what I want to talk about. My brother just got married this past Sunday, and I was in my hometown, and I was, you know, ready to celebrate Saturday night helping my parents, and I get a phone call from my grandma. So my grandma's old, she's like 70-something years old. She calls my mom and says, tell Seokju, my brother, tell him to get a bottle of soju liquor, Korean, my grandfather's favorite drink, okay? Get a bottle of soju, have him pour it into a cup, set it up towards east or west, I forget. And then she goes, make sure he bows down twice to it and tell grandpa that he's getting married tomorrow, okay? By the way, my grandpa passed away years ago. My grandma was dead serious about this. And she was like, take a picture of it when he's doing it and send it to me. So it was so important for her that my brother makes sure to pay his honor to the dead grandpa about his marriage. Okay, I didn't make this up. True story, okay? Confucianism is not just a field of studies. It's not just a system of thoughts. It's not just writing on ethics or morals. That's what a lot of foreigners think it is, but that's not it. For East Asia, especially China, Korea, Japan, originated from China, came to Korea, and then went to Japan, it had massive influence for hundreds of years. And China and Japan, they actually took steps to really cut it out while they were being westernized. But for some reason, Korea is known to have kept most of its values, most of its traditions, and we did not renounce it. So the culture has a lot of influence still melted into it, and way more than China, which is the origin of Confucianism. So Korea is the country, probably most Confucian country that you will find on the face of the earth. And Confucianism was the governing principle for Joseon Dynasty for 500 years. That is a long time. It was accepted and followed as the way of life and served as a form of religion. Yes, I said religion. It's a form of religion. Many people think Confucius started to create these teachings, and that's why it's called Confucianism. Not true. Confucius was simply the one who picked up on this teaching. He organized a lot of the teachings and said a lot of good stuff. And when he was alive, actually, he didn't even get any highlight. He was just Confucius, right? And then his disciples or other scholars, after he passed away, compiled all his good sayings and whatever and turned it into this glorious Confucianism. And that's how it became passed down to us, okay? All right, I'm losing everybody here. Okay, I know he's dead, and I know you don't care about him, but if you really want to understand Korean culture, stay with me. This history lesson will set you free, okay? No, like, really. And the root goes way back to 1300 BC, okay, before Christ, 1300 BC, and this is 800 years before Confucius was even born. Okay, this goes way back, so I'm going to talk about the roots. So there were hundreds of tribal kingdoms in China, and among them was called Sang tribe, Sang Bujok, okay? Sang tribe and Jogab, this is the name of a king, is one of the kings who took the kingship from his older brother by coup d'etat. Okay, I really had to practice this word. Okay. I don't know if I said it right, but coup d'etat, whatever, yeah. And so this was like his brother's throne, and the younger brother actually took it by force, you know, and then he took it by coup d'etat, okay? And but however, if you read this historical book, the Book of Documents, for Koreans, it's called Sangseo. It's actually one of, it's a collection of Chinese royal history. And this book is one of the key texts for Confucianism. So if you're going to study Confucianism, you have to read this book multiple times. In the Book of Documents, this book records that coup d'etat this way, okay? It says, he reluctantly took the throne of his brother, obeying the will of his father, okay? The father clearly passed it down to the first son, and then the second son, years later, took it by force, okay? But then the book says, it said, he reluctantly took the throne of his brother, obeying the will of the father. Okay, so how do we know that this is not true? Pastor Myung, how do you know? I know because my sources tell me that there was a massive discovery of bone and shell scripts in China in 1899. So bone and shell scripts, 갑골 문자 is all these pieces of bones and shells and people wrote stuff on it. And then it was buried for like hundreds of years, okay? So this is before Chinese character was invented. So all these people like wrote down history and it was just buried for centuries. And then at the end of like 1800s, some farmers just found them and then they started digging up the area and then there were like hundreds of thousands of them. Like, for real, hundred thousands and more than that. So all these pieces came out. So they started to study the text, right? And then what these reveal is that the history that they knew was legit in that book of documents was all fake. I'm sorry, Chinese people, okay? A lot of things were actually made up. And a more accurate way to say is that these books were modified and adjusted to fit the Confucian values. They wanted to protect this system so badly that they started to manipulate the text and the history to prove that, hey, Confucianism is a great system. It keeps kingdoms going. It keeps the families together. But a lot of its stories were just selective or they're just modified and straight up made up. Did you guys follow my story? Yeah? So, one of the truths that are discovered by these shell and bone scripts is that ancestor worship was the core of the revolution that was followed by this coup d'etat. So what happened was, this guy just took his throne by force, okay? And it's called illegitimate authority. He's not the one who got the authority from the former king. He took it by force and therefore is it legit? No. It's illegitimate authority. Would you guys agree? Yeah? So he took it and he had to find a way to protect or justify that he was the rightful king to take the throne. So he created this glorious theory about how his ancestors were actually divine beings and they control the wars, they control the weather, and my ancestors are the best. So that's how he created the system of 제사 to justify that his illegitimate authority was actually legit. Okay? So this is the root and the very birth point of Confucianism. I'm going somewhere with this, okay? My forefathers are more powerful than your gods. Because that was time of shamanism, totemism. You know, everybody believed that every animal was God, whatever. And he was there to say, hey, my ancestors actually are way more powerful than them. And I'm their descendant. So that's why I have to be the king. You know, so that was his theory. And this is the origin of the very 제사 that Korean people still observe. So this system was established to justify and give power to this illegitimate authority. And they turned dead people into divine beings. Ancestors were long gone. And he made them into some divine powerful beings. And the essence of this origin is this. Very clear. Witchcraft. Everyone say witchcraft. Witchcraft, by definition, is it's a use of illegitimate authority and a system to justify that authority. So that's pretty much what this person did, and that was the heart behind 제사, witchcraft. Also, idolatry. Everyone say idolatry. Idolatry, by definition, is worshipping objects or beings that are other than God, our God. You know, obviously, it started as idolatry. Everyone say divination. And also known as occultic practices. They were seeking power, knowledge, and blessing from a source that are other than God. You know, there's only one true God, and if you seek power, knowledge, blessing from a source that's not God, that's called occultic practices. Especially with knowledge, it's called divination. And what these, you know, they had all these elites that came up with very intricate system to give food to the ancestors. You know, very systematic way to set up the table. And all these things, they came up with it to prove, and all that was occultic practices. So witchcraft, idolatry, divination, I think the worst three words from the Bible are all found here, okay? And it can't get worse than this, okay? So Confucian scholars, even nowadays, the debate is this, okay? Even some Catholic believers or even some Christian believers, their justification for observing 제사 is this. 제사 is an extension of filial piety after my parents' passing. So I love them, I honor them so much that my 효도, my 효심, filial piety goes beyond their passing. So even though they are dead, I still want to honor them. That's their excuse. However, at the root of this 제사 and the practice, if you look at the origin that I just explained, 제사 was instituted before even the teaching on the virtue of filial piety. Even before they taught about parents, honor your parents, love your parents, none of that existed. What it began with is ancestor worship, for witchcraft, occultic practices, and idolatry. And then they started to build other teachings around it to protect the system. 제사 was a way to declare that the spirit of the king's ancestors were higher gods than all these shamanism and all these things. And they wanted to receive blessing and protection from the ancestors for the existence of the nation. We're not fooled. History is very clear. And God is very clear on Exodus chapter 20 when he gave the Ten Commandments to his people. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above or on the earth beneath or in the waters below. Exodus chapter 23-4, it makes it very clear, do not make any other gods. And this is 제사, creating gods out of deceased parents, and that's what they were doing. The practice of 제사 cannot be justified with the name of filial piety. And this practice of 제사 is keeping Korea under a national curse and bondage. There's always consequences to an act of idolatry. And the Bible says it very clearly. And the entire nation observing this, worshiping their ancestors, this must stop for Korea's freedom. Another very strong point about Confucianism is that Confucianism is all about the bloodline. Okay? And therefore, it connects to oppression of women. I'm going to talk about that. I am going to talk about that, right? It's all about the bloodline. So the root is found in these four letters. In Korean, it's called 남존여비. I hate these four words, by the way. It simply means this. Men are worthy, women are unworthy. Simple. Men, worthy. Women, unworthy. Okay? These are one of the underlying principles of Confucianism. 남존여비. Okay? Why? Because the whole society is all about the bloodline and the genealogy. And it gets passed down by the sons. It goes from son to son to son to son. So if you don't have a son and have like 10 daughters, oh, your family line gets cut. That's the concept, okay? So it's daughters don't matter. How many ever you have, doesn't matter. You gotta have a son. That's why men are worthy and women are unworthy. They're not that significant. Confucianism, it's a system where men will carry the bloodline, like I just said, and also they will carry the last name. Choi to Choi to Choi, Kim to Kim to Kim, you know, last name. And also the tradition of, guess what? 제사. It's all around 제사. You might hear my relatives talk about, like, sons. They don't say 아들, they don't say son. They say 제사 받을 사람, which means who will receive the privilege of observing the 제사. You know, that's like their name for first sons. That's how they refer to it. That's how important it is for them. So whoever does 제사 is worthy, and whoever doesn't really do anything for 제사 isn't that worthy. And Confucianism is a system to protect the powerful. You know, at the beginning, it was to protect the power of the king, right? So it is a system, if you really study it, it protects the authority and power of older people. It's all about the older people. Young people don't matter, okay? It's all about the older people who live long enough to know things in their mindset. It's all about men. Women don't really matter, okay? And also, it's all about the rich and powerful. People with authority, it protects their power and authority, and every little part of Confucianism is there to really revolve around them. So, if you are young, you have no voice. If you're female, no mic for you. If you are poor, you don't have a voice. And if you are not from a significant bloodline, you don't really have significance. It's all about who's already powerful. It's all about protecting their power and their privileges. It's a very common picture. If you've ever been to a Korean gathering for holidays, like 추석, 설날, 추석's coming up, right? So if you go to a Korean gathering, you will notice easily there's segregation between the men and women. So if you go to where actually the 제사is happening, where the food is and everything, there will be all these older men hanging out around the table. And if you go to the kitchen, you will find all the women and you'll find all the kids there, okay? And all the cooking happens there, but all the eating happens at the men's table. And then whatever is left over comes back to the kitchen, and then the kids and the women, they usually eat that, okay? So that's a very common picture. Kitchen floor in Korean traditional homes are systematically, it's designed to be lower than any other places in your house. So my grandma actually lives still in Shigol, like boonies out in the, you know, ghetto. And then they still have a really old house. And then if you go in, there's like a yard, not like grass or anything, but like a yard. And then you gotta go like a step down into the kitchen. And then you gotta go up to the maru, which is like a living room area. So the kitchen is actually the lowest place, even in the physical, like, design of the house. Very common. And if you drive in the city, it's very common for female drivers to hear more yelling, yeah? And then there's like a typical line. If you're Korean, you know this line. 집에서 소뚜껑 운전이나 하지. Have you guys ever heard of it? Is this Busan thing, man? Anyways, it's very common thing. It's even on TV. So what it means is, women, you should have been driving your pot lead at home. You should be managing your kitchen. What are you doing out here? It's very derogatory, like, comment, but it's very common. So if you are a female driver, you probably heard it multiple times, like men yelling at them, you should go home and cook for your kids type of comments, you know? Women were barely educated until Christianity came into Korea, and the Western missionaries came and they noticed that none of the women were being educated. There were no education offer. Even my parents, my mom only went to elementary school. I know it's a little extreme, but her case is a little extreme. My dad went to college, okay? But my mom's siblings, both of the brothers, they all went to college. So it was just my mom who had to sacrifice. So very common thing. Women were barely educated, and all these Western missionaries started to build school, like Ewha Wuens University. You know, that's my school. Awesome school. So proud of it. Anyways, and there were many other examples, but there was almost... Oh, this is a good one. There was always more male population than female population in Korea back in like late 90s. It was because parents would abort the girls when they find out the gender in the womb. And they will find out, oh, it's another girl. Let's get abortion. And so that's why, by law, Korean government had to make it illegal for the doctors to reveal the gender of the baby to protect all these female fetuses, because they were literally a situation of life or death, you know. I heard that's getting better, though. So praise God for that. All these precious girls are, you know, don't have to go through that. But that's how extreme it was. There were more male population because they just preferred boys over girls. Even nowadays, I still read articles about how women get paid less in Korea for the same career, same qualifications, same work experiences, credentials, but their wage is just about 200 to 300 lower. I wonder why. And if you go to a Korean company, it's very common for girls to be in charge of making coffee for everybody, you know, running over to do little, you know, run errands. It's still a very common culture because the perception of women is very Confucian. You know, what was the ideal woman in Confucian culture? You know, what do you think? You actually see her pretty often. She's the lady on 5만 원 bill. If any of you have one, give it to me, yeah? You'll never get it back. You know, if you have a 5만 원 bill, 50,000 won bill, open it. And it has a lady's face. And, you know, people think it's like, oh, great honor. You know, a woman's face is on the biggest bill of Korea. And that's great and all. But, you know, let's really think about who this lady is. Does anybody know her name? Oh yeah, Koreans will know. Her name is Shin Sa-im-dang. I know, it's very unconventional. It's four letters, okay? Not three. Shin Sa-im-dang. And she's, what did she do? Here's a summary, great summary. She was an obedient daughter when she was young, then a great wife, and then a good mom to an outstanding scholar. The end, okay? I mean, she had other skills. She was a great painter. I think she was good at poetry and things like that. However, there were, you know, not much more than this. And I absolutely agree that those are amazing virtues of women. And I'm not saying being a mom is like whatever. I am not saying that. I personally respect her. And these are great virtues. However, it's hard to believe that that's the reason why she made it to this 5만 원 bill. And she's the most respected and famous woman in Korea's history. And there's a reason. There's an agenda behind it. Men of Korea wanted to promote her so much so that every girl, every young lady in Korea will want to become like her. Faithful wife, good mother. The virtuous woman in Confucian culture. And nothing more than that. You know, if that's a good thing, but if that's the limit, if that's the boundary that she could be, that's the greatest she could be. You know, no other career, she cannot pursue anything further than that. Then I think it's a problem. So the agenda was, I think, because when I was young, man, I would hear about her all the time. Like every great history book, always Shin Sa-im-dang. It always covers her, you know. And why would you emphasize her so much? You don't hear about any other women. You know, you have like all these biographies of people. Biography? Autobiography? Biography? And among them, I'll say like three or four of them will be like female, you know, people, female people, women. And then the rest of them will be all these men, you know. And so that was very, it was norm, but then I never picked up on that, you know. I still love my 5만 원 bill, but I'm just saying, it's very accurate description of the Confucian virtues of women. That's all they were expected to be. And it was very highly promoted for all women to become like her. And that was a limit, okay? So that's the issue. It systematically really opposed the women from fulfilling what was more, you know? And the list goes on. It stifles Confucianism stifles creativity and innovative thinking. And if you are a teacher, you will probably know, you notice probably by observing your kids, studying, to me, it meant nothing other than sitting at a desk, reading or writing something. That was just the picture of studying, you know. So when like my mom opens the door, I will just, as long as I was seated and then a book was open, she was happy, you know, okay, she's studying, you know. And memorization and solving problems was the only form of study that I knew. I'm either solving problems or memorizing something. I wasn't even allowed in my high school during study hall, which lasted until like 11 p.m. every night, by the way. I wasn't even allowed to read a book because that doesn't help me for my college entrance exams. So I would get yelled at for reading books and stuff like that. So Korean kids are only told to do what matters, which is what's going to be on the exam. That's all you are supposed to do. No hobbies for you, no adventures for you, until you go to college, until you make it to that first year college, nothing for you. Your responsibility is to study. And that's how people in back in Joseon Dynasty, that's how people used to study for something called 과거시험. It's their like way of government picking the elites, you know, from like the entire nation. So all these men will like walk for like a month to Seoul. And then they will all sit down in this like courtyard type of place. And then they will all take out their painting brush and they will like write things away. And it's like memorization-based exams to really choose the elites. But then how do you choose elites based on their ability to memorize things, you know? Anyways, reason why Koreans can't speak English well, here's the reason why, okay? It's because they study it like these old men did. They study it to memorize it, never to use it. They don't know how to learn the language. They just sit there and they just write it 20 times over and over again. And they don't even know how to say it, you know? And they know how to spell it, but they don't know how to say it. That's how I was. Okay, that was me in high school. That's how I studied. And I thought I would get better at English, but then no, not at all. Okay, that's why Koreans can study languages, because this is like all they know. This is what studying means. But it all comes from the culture of Confucian textbook. You got to read it like 100, 200 times and memorize it all. And that's how they used to study, and that was virtue. Arts and sports were for the kids that are not smart enough. Really. 그거는 공부 못하는 것들이 하는 거야. That's what I heard when I told my parents I wanted to get into art. Okay, I was pretty good. Okay, so my teachers were like, why don't you just get into drawing? And then when I told my parents, they were like, 그럼 공부 못하는 애들이 하는 거지. And pretty much saying like, that's for the dummies. Yeah. No offense. That's but how older people used to think about artists, how they used to think about athletes. Because their brain is not good enough. They have to do that, but you don't have to type of thing. Entertainments were looked down upon, and they were labeled as 딴따라, which is a very derogatory label for anyone in entertainment. Like 딴따라, you know, don't get into 딴따라. It's like a public shame for the entire family. Reason why most Koreans are in law school or medical school, and they don't choose any other schools? Now you know why. It's the worship of elitism, you know. They all want to be elite, and their parents all want it. So they choose it. This is a very sad reality, but you can make correlation. All started from the root, Confucianism. They worshiped elitism, they worshiped the brain, and they really despised and neglected everything else. Lastly, this is my main point. This is, I think, the one that's most harmful from the culture of Confucianism, along with Cheza. It turns the generations against each other. And let me explain. Children are not supposed to speak back to the authorities. That's how they grow up. No question, no comment. It's changing, so if the kids are younger, they have better environment. But even back in the days, no communication is possible. If you think about it, parents say something and you're not supposed to say anything back. Communication is just non-existent, right? You should say something to have a conversation. But it's parents communicating, but you're not supposed to say anything back. So sadly, this still is happening. Even the other day, right in front of this building, I was walking by to get lunch the other day, and I saw a teenager son, two sons, and mom and dad walking by. And I actually witnessed really violent scene. So the father, like, smacked the face of the older son, and his tooth broke on the spot. So it was, like, really intense moment. And the reason was because he talked back to him. He said something back to the father. And he just said, you know, something bad. And then he just smacked him. And what was really shocking was the younger brother and the mom acted like nothing was happening. You know, and then I think it happens all the time. And I probably know that if they react, father gets more angry. So they were just acting like nothing was going on. And the older son was just literally shaking with anger. You know, and the mother was just saying, 가만히 있어라. Don't say anything. Don't move. Just stay still. And then I just had to walk by, you know. Another Korean thing, you never get into a family business. It's their own business. You don't say anything. You can never just mention anything, you know? So it's still happening. You know, authority, no talking back, no comment. Blind obedience, submission. Children are often considered parents' possessions. You know, I invested all of this into your life, so it's your mind. You do what I tell you to do, and I know better. You know? Sounds familiar? If you're a Korean, probably heard about this. And they don't tell you, and this is the most frustrating thing, I think. When you grow up, this causes relational strife so much. This is a very common thing. Parents don't communicate what they expect from the parents because children are supposed to know it without asking. Passive-aggressive to the max. But this is very common for Korean parents. Or they will say one thing, but they will expect another thing, you know? And explaining things to children is like a shameful thing. You should know without me telling you. You know, you should know what to do. Very common lines are 도리를 해라, 예의를 갖춰라. These are more traditional terms, but do the right thing is pretty much the direct translation. Do what you are supposed to do. And nobody tells you what you're supposed to do. You just should know. It's kind of like instinct. Why don't you know it? You're supposed to know it and do what's right. And it's like a mantra of Korean adults. There are so many rules, so many responsibilities, so many formalities to follow in Korean culture. And this creates so much room for entitlement, unhealthy expectations, and therefore disappointments and gossip and drama. It's just best recipe for family drama. And if you watch Korean dramas, you think it's full of drama. It's actually what's happening in reality. Korean families are full of dramas. Not every family, but it tends to have so much drama because of this passive aggressive, you should do the right thing, you're supposed to know what it is type of culture. And this is especially true in parent-child relationship more than any other authority relationships. Things that you're supposed to say, days you're supposed to call them, days you're supposed to visit them, gifts that you're supposed to give on certain occasions, like 내복. If you get your first paycheck, you're supposed to buy them undergarments. Tradition, you know, and like you're expected to give them pocket money. Like, how much though? Nobody tells you. You should just give them right amount. As small as table manners, adults always have to pick up their spoon first. You guys know that? Yeah? You should know that. They should eat first and then you're supposed to eat after them, okay? And to taking care of old parents. Who's going to take care of it? All this stuff, there are rules and formalities, but nobody really tells you what to do. But there is an expectation. And there is disappointment. There is drama. And nobody seems to know what's going on. There are so many unspoken rules that are imposed on you in a passive-aggressive manner for generations. So they are jaded by Confucianism. I think my grandparents are jaded. My parents are jaded, but then the same expectation comes down to my generation. And I wonder why. Bondage is the answer, right? On the outside, Confucianism sounds like it's all about honoring and it's all about loving. That's the mask that it wears. However, the formalities and the laws are actually killing the spirit of love and honor altogether. When you put entitlements, when you put expectations, when you put all these rules and formalities, there's no way for honor to be flowing. There's no way for love to be flowing in this family. When you do something, you did what you're supposed to do. So, sure, taken for granted. When you don't do anything, then you're scolded for not doing what you're supposed to do. What am I supposed to do then? You know, you do something, sure. You don't do something, then you get yelled at. It's things like this. There's a movie coming out about this historic figure. His name is Ha Do-se-ja. Yoo-ah-in, he's a very good-looking, handsome actor. So he's going to be in that movie. So if you want to watch it, girls, go watch it. But it's a very tragic story that's super famous, but this is like the family drama in its essence. And the reason is so clearly Confucianism. None other than Confucianism. Yongzhou is the king of Joseon. His son, the successor, is Hado Seja. And there is just expectation, him not meeting the expectation. Therefore, the son is scared of the father, and he's king, right? So in the royal family, there are so much more expectations, formalities that you are supposed to observe. Every morning you have to go meet him. You have to ask him about how the meal was. You know, there are rules for everything. And this son, I think it's like a prophetic symbol. Why is this movie coming out now, you know? And this guy can't take it anymore. I think he goes into like panic attack or something. So he can never go see his father, who is the king. So king is disappointed all the time. And there is building up a frustration, and how it ends is tragic. I don't want to spoil the movie, but this is just historic fact. The king, okay, this is really sad. King puts him into a cabinet, like a tiju, which is like a rice box, wooden rice box, and he dies there. The son dies after 9 days of being locked up in that tiny cabinet. The king and the prince of a nation. And what is the root of this type of dysfunctional family, do you think, is? It's not just misunderstanding. It's not just lack of communication. This is generations of people literally being oppressed by the Confucian cultures. And they could not get out of it. And I think that's what led to this tragedy. This is demonic, to say the least. This is a demonic culture. And this culture hinders the flow of thanksgiving, appreciation, and love and mutual honor that the Bible talks about in Ephesians chapter 6. It looks like they're talking about the same thing. Honor your parents. Obey your parents, for it is good. You know? And it looks like what Confucius is saying and what the Bible is saying. Oh, they are so similar. Obey your parents, honor your parents. But in its essence, it's completely different. One is all about witchcraft and control. It's all about entitlement, and there's no love or no honor in that. However, what the Bible is telling us to do is honor, love, care, you know. So these two things are completely different. So do not be fooled to think that, oh, this beautiful culture needs to be preserved for generations. I really don't think so. Keep the good ones. I think there are good ones. But we really need to be discerning about the rest of it. Behind the nice and proper face of Confucianism are broken, dysfunctional, drama-filled families that don't even know how to communicate with each other. And their greatest enemy is always public shame. Nobody should know, you know. So they put off the face where everything is going great, and they are so consumed in keeping things hidden. Nobody should know that we have family dramas. And with the younger generation being so different and resenting this type of culture, you could imagine, you know, the teenagers these days, they will not buy this, you know? And there is growing gap and distance between parents and children. And I see this so often, and I see this even in my friends' family. I see this. The gap is growing because the difference between the grandpa generation and the younger generation is so great. And it's only growing, and the distance is definitely being extended. Malachi chapter 4, you guys know the last book of the Bible. And the last two verses, chapter 4, 5 to 6 says this. Behold, I will send you Elijah, the prophet, before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes. Talking about the end times. And he will turn the hearts of the fathers to their children and the hearts of children to their fathers. Lest I come and strike the land with a decree of utter destruction. Confucianism is the major reason why generations cannot turn to one another. And before Jesus returns, we ought to pray that the bondage of Confucianism will be broken from this country. You know, I was thinking, God, only half the room's going to understand what I'm really talking about. Because there's only limited examples I can give. There are only you know, there's cultural context. But I felt like I was saying, no, I'm just giving you guys a key to break open the bondage. Because I was thinking, you know, it's great that they get to know about these things. But also, I felt a little ashamed as being a Korean, you know. Felt like exposing my people's weak point, you know, to all these people from outside. But I felt like I was saying, no, key is really prayer. As these people hold a key to really break this bondage off of this nation, there is going to be change. And Korea is in a very vulnerable stage where the culture is radically changing. It's changing each day, and I feel like different influences are trying to get in. And they're trying to grab attention, they're trying to grab power and authority over people. And the way people think are changing, and our young people, their mindsets are so vulnerable. And at this point, I think it's important for us to be shaping their culture, shaping Korea's culture towards kingdom culture. We really have to remember this. And God also reminded me of how this message is related to, really, the freedom of Korea. We call this, New Philly, my church, we call this healing and deliverance ministry. It deals with the past of a person. So the sins that were committed to me, but also sins that I have committed. You know, so dealing with healing, receiving healing for the sins that were committed, such as traumas, things like that, hurts. But if you think about Korea as a nation, Korea has massive amount of traumas. Korean War, killing each other's brothers, you know. So many people died. We killed each other. That's national trauma. Go back by 50 years, early 1900s, Japanese rule for about 30 years. Ruthless Japanese rule that Korean people had to go through. Trauma after trauma, broken people are truly Korean people. But if you think about the deliverance aspect, which deals with occultic practices, you know, which deals with areas of idolatry, major area is very clear to me. It's Confucianism. It's the practice of Chesa. That's what Korea needs for the true freedom as a nation. And how do we do this as individuals for the nation? It is through prayer. And that's why I wanted to end this time with prayer. And I just want to invite everyone to stand with me.